Welcome. Elise. Gives Albert Elise. Squares it in. Torres. Oh, he flicked it on to Manotas. Manotas! Hits for goal number three. Oh, this is a dagger to Real Salt Lake.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. So much going on tonight here around the Champions League final. I just want to remind you here of a couple of things. Check out Kings Court, 903 Hutchins in Edo. Great place for watching soccer. By the way, this is the most authentic soccer bar near BBVA Compass Stadium. So whether you're down there to watch the Dynamo or the Dash, get in there pre-post-game. You can watch Champions League matches there as well, including the final tomorrow. It's a great place, rooftop patio. It is a real authentic soccer pub feel. Say hello to our good friend Jerry there. Mexico, Ghana, June 28th. Mexico will come back to Houston, where they have come so many times before. Don't miss this opportunity to see Mexico ahead of the Gold Cup. Tickets are now on sale. Ticketmaster.com starting at $30. All right, joining us right now, and you know, there's times when you are reminded soccer secondary to bigger things in life. And the Houston Dash's Sarah Hagen joins us now. Has got an amazing story here that we want to kind of get out there because I think it's inspirational. Sarah, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Well, yours is an interesting story. Yours is an inspirational story. So in 2000, you're 15 years old. You're growing up in Wisconsin. You're playing soccer. You're a healthy young lady. All of a sudden, you get diagnosed with cancer. How serious did you realize this was as a 15-year-old?
Yeah, you know, it was a complete shock. You know, I was just going into the second half of the year with being a freshman in high school. And so, you know, that transition in its own is, you know, you're in a bigger school and it's a tough transition. And then to have to deal with going through cancer treatments, it was a tough time. But, you know, I was, like I said, I was 15 years old. And I think what really got me through all that was just my family and friends and all the support that I had from my school, teammates, teachers, everyone like that. That definitely made a big impact.
How did you stay focused? Because, you know, you're still having to go to school. You're still playing games, all the things that a normal person has to do. But, you know, you're in a life-threatening situation.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I basically had to put everything else on hold and just worry about getting better. I was playing, I mean, up until I was brought into the hospital, I was doing soccer tournaments, basketball tournaments. And then all of a sudden, you know, the next 2 days later, I'm going in for an exploratory surgery and having test results, you know, lab work, all this stuff to find out what exactly is wrong with me. And then you kind of get this, you know, heavy news of that, you know, you have cancer. I mean, I was 15. I mean, nobody should have to deal with cancer, and let alone a kid. In some ways, I think that almost made me go through the process a little bit easier because I was so young and I didn't understand everything. I just did as what I was told, and I was on a mission. I, you know, whatever they told me to do to get better, that's what I did. And like I said, with the support of my family and friends to remind me that I am loved and that, you know, I can get through it, that's what really pushed me to try to overcome it.
Do you gain confidence once you get the plan from the doctor and you get the people with the knowledge around you? Do you gain confidence? And before you answer that, let me just remind the listeners here. She had a tumor that was as big as a size 4 soccer ball. This is incredible stuff here. And it was growing. But once you get the plan in place and the support system around you, is it become easier to fight this very dangerous and scary situation?
I think really you just have to take it step by step. I mean, not even day by day, just hour by hour, really. You know, they give you the plan of what they're going to attempt to do as far as treatments. And it's basically, it depends on how your body responds to it. You know, there's no guarantees that, you know, the chemotherapy is going to work. There's no guarantees that, you know, your body isn't going to just reject it. So, I mean, there was tough times. After I woke up from my initial surgery, my kidneys were failing on me. I had pancreatitis. And then by, you know, the second chemotherapy, my body basically rejected the chemo, and I went into anaphylactic shock. So, there's a few minutes where I stopped breathing. And I'm very happy and blessed that I was able to come out of the experience alive and, to have a story to share. But, there's definitely times throughout those 5 months where I wasn't, positive that I was going to make it, or I wasn't completely sure that, something awful wasn't going to happen. So, again, I really couldn't have done it without my family around me.
You went through chemotherapy, and I've known a lot of friends and a lot of young people that have just gone through countless bouts with chemotherapy, which is incredibly difficult. And I can't even speak on it, obviously, because I've never had it, but just watching young people. Talk about chemotherapy and how you have to get through it.
It's a pretty bad drug, and I went through 3 rounds, lost my hair, you get mouth sores, and food doesn't taste the same, and you're just completely drained of energy. I remember one time, this is probably, after my second round, and I wanted to go shoot a basketball, and I literally could not even throw it up to hit the rim. So that just kind of shows you how much it just completely drains you of energy. You lose all your muscle. I think one of the hardest parts about going through chemo is, since your immune system gets so low, I wasn't able to go to school. If I had friends or family members come over to visit me, a lot of them couldn't even come inside. We just had them stand outside and talk from there. It's extremely tough on your body, but I needed to do to, try to fight that cancer, and luckily, it responded.
So now we got through the rough stuff. The good news is you became cancer-free. When you heard those words, you were cancer-free, and you had beaten this. What goes on in a human's mind?
I remember the day like it was yesterday. I was sitting in our, kitchen playing cards with my grandparents. The phone rang, and my mom answered it. They were asking to speak to me. I spoke with the doctor, and they said, the last results of the tumor came back, that it was non-cancerous anymore. And so I was sitting there, and I knew that was good news, but I still couldn't believe it. I was like, all right, so what do we do next? And, he said, you can go live your life like you were before cancer. And I literally paused, and I was like, okay, so when do I come back to the hospital again? And he's like, well, next time you come, it's just for a checkup. So I was in complete shock, and I couldn't really actually grasp, I was like, when's my next chemo treatment, when's the next surgery, when's the next lab work, scans, all that. I was just so thrilled to finally have that part of my life in the past and to move forward. And I remember I went straight to my high school to tell all my friends who were at softball practice and soccer practice. I went and told everyone, and it was a day that I'll never forget.
Well, the good news is cancer-free, and then you take a scholarship to University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You go professional playing in Germany with Bayern Munich. You score 38 goals there in 51 appearances over 2 years. You come back to the NWSL in 2014. You're an elite athlete now. By the way, the Houston Dash and Sarah Hagen tomorrow will be in Washington taking on the Washington Spirit. It's just a remarkable story. When you're running out of the tunnel and you're going onto the field, do you flash back to any of this where you are, to sort of breathe in and drink in the moment of every single game and every single play you make?
Yeah, definitely. And I think even more so on the training pitch, just, that's when you, really put in the hard work so that you're prepared for the games. And, just looking back at what I've been able to overcome in my personal life has made, little things like running a sprint or whatnot that much more doable. And even off the soccer pitch, just anything in life where if I'm having a bad day or whatnot, I can always look back and remember that, those days 15 years or 12 years ago were so much worse than they are now. So it's definitely something that I keep in the back of my head, and just remind myself.
Anybody out there that would be going through this, that might be listening to this show, what would you tell them?
I would definitely tell them to persevere. Life isn't always easy, and you might not know what's going to be handed to you the next day, but stay positive as much as you can throughout those difficult times, because that's what really got me through it. And like I said, my family, my friends, the support, the people in your life who are always by your side, those are the people that really help you get through tough times, and I definitely wouldn't have been able to do it without them.
You as the patient, getting the support from teammates, friends, family, coaches, whatever, classmates, what do you learn back from them when they're showering you with this support?
Just, be a good person. I mean, treat people the way that you want to be treated. Those people that were by my side, that really stepped up when they didn't really have to, classmates that I may not have ever talked to before that, reached out to me. And then for the people who, reached out and were there actually by my side in the hospital, I remember those people who came to visit me, and it meant the world to me, and it still does. And so I just want to, if I know someone who's in a similar situation, or, whether it's cancer or whatever that might be difficult, I try to be the best person I can be to them too.
Sarah, what an incredible story. Just let's go a little current here with the Houston Dash before we go. Were you guys shocked that Randy Waldron was replaced, and sort of what's the mood around the Houston Dash ahead of the game against the Washington Spirit?
Yeah, I mean, I think any time when there's a change in, for your head coach, it's a shock, and I had the utmost respect for Randy as a coach and as a person. I've had him as a coach with the U23 national team, and I've, stayed in touch with him over the years while I've played in my professional career, and I knew that he was interested in getting me to Houston, after being waived by Orlando, I was extremely grateful for the opportunity that he brought me here to Houston. I think he's going to go on to do great things no matter what it is. For now we have Omar as our new head coach, and we fully back him, and we've had a great week of training and are really looking forward to stepping on that field Saturday in D.C.,
Before I let you go, differences between the NWSL and playing in Germany in the Bundesliga for Bayern Munich?
I would definitely have to say the U.S. League is much more athletic, faster, quicker. From the first place team to the eighth place team, it doesn't really matter. It's going to be a great game. The German Bundesliga, you had your top teams, and it was much more technical. So those are just kind of a few comparisons I've noticed after playing in both of the leagues.
Sarah, really appreciate you sharing this story with us. Thank you so much for doing that. We wish you the best of luck against the Washington Spirit tomorrow and in your future endeavors in the NWSL. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, that's Sarah Hagen. Dash will be in action against the Washington Spirit tomorrow. What an interview that was. A moment before we go to break, for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. It doesn't matter whether your accident is car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, might drive an 18-wheeler. The Daspit Law Firm is going to assure you they'll treat your case as if it's their own. DaspitLaw.com, working for you 24-7, nights and weekends. Fight for your right for compensation with John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. Take a break. We'll take a break, and it's a Bud Light break.
ESPN 97.5.
Going past people at will. Here's Elise. Albert Elise. It's a tapper.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, we roll on here with Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 tonight. Obviously, the discussion is dominated by Real Madrid and Juventus. Before we move on here, though, just a couple of quick things here. King's Court, it's at 903 Hutchins and Edo. It's on the corner of Walker and Hutchins. 13 TVs. King's Court shows the EPL, Dynamo matches, NFL Sunday Ticket. They've got 24 taps, a full bar, great selection of spirits, and great Indian British cuisine. It's a rooftop patio, a real soccer pub feel in Edo. It is the soccer pub in Edo. So if you're a genuine, authentic soccer fan, well, then you want to go to King's Court, say hello to my good friend Jay there. Also, Liberty Kitchen. This is modern American comfort food. It's classics taken up several notches. Great burgers, mac and cheese, chicken fried. They'll stamp their claim on farm stand crisp food. Big flavor served at a neighborhood social. It's Liberty Kitchen. One of my favorites there is a Creole gumbo and crab meat. Oysters on the half shell. Cowboy Surfers, the po' boy. Stop by their locations. Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, and Treehouse Memorial City. Okay, next guest, good friend of mine. We just did some FIFA Under 20 World Cup, which, by the way, the United States have gotten to the quarterfinals, which is great news. He is also the Real Salt Lake analyst. You see him on national broadcasts as well. He's Brian Dunseth. Brian, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it, my man. Now I'm starving after listening to you do that read.
Well, I mean, I hope they appreciate that at Liberty Kitchen, because I get awful hungry when I hear other people talking about food, so right? it works. All right, so before we get to Champions League, you're the RSL broadcaster. You know that team inside and out. They absolutely got hammered by the Dynamo 5-1. Give me one word to describe that Real Salt Lake performance.
Embarrassing. I can go on. Embarrassing, debacle, prideless. Probably one of the most self-inflicted results that I've seen in a long, long time. Listen, that was one of those performances where after the game, if you can't look in the mirror and say that's not good enough, then you should be very concerned about your job come January or July 1st, because that's indicative of a lot of changes needed inside that locker room.
You know, that was more than one word, but you know what? I'm really glad you went into that, because you used the word prideless. Is there some toxicity there that has to be cleaned out?
I think it's always a fair and valid question, to be quite honest with you. I think that Houston's gone through it. You could say the LA Galaxy is kind of in the midst of it as well. Mm-hmm. And it's Real Salt Lake's turn. Is when you maybe over rely on a few of the staples and the names on the back of the jerseys for 1 year or 2 years too long, that it could really come back and haunt you. And when that team didn't win that 2013 MLS Cup final, they'd gone in all that year on the backside of that run in CONCACAF Champions League. I think from a certain perspective, the fan base maybe held on too long to the likes of a Will Johnson, and Ned Grabovoi, Chris Swinger, to Kyle Beckerman, and Nick Raimondo, and Nap Borchers, Alvaro Sabarillo, Javier Morales, because those are all the staples of the back of that jersey. So there are some questions. I think you and I both know, and we've talked about this before, one of the best things that ever happened for a player's perspective in MLS is a guaranteed contract. One of the worst things that ever happened from a management and technical director, a general manager, and a head coach's perspective, that players got guaranteed contracts. So you cannot make too many mistakes in the way that MLS works nowadays.
Boy, it is problematic, when you've had these great servants to soccer clubs and you struggle on how the exit strategy works, and it can cause you real problems, and it can extend into a year or two in trying to reform your team. I don't think there's any question. I think it's a wonderful point you bring up. Brian Dunseth joining us here. We were just talking a bit Real Salt Lake and the Houston Dynamo. Let's move on to the Champions League final. I think this one has got a ton of storylines, as we all know, Brian. There's all kinds of talk going on around the world about this one tomorrow on Saturday. First off, let's talk about Real Madrid trying to win back-to-back titles.
Heck of a team. Glenn, you and I, we've talked about this group of players, and it's phenomenal to think about the likes of Keylor Navas and the season that he continues to have. Zidane, how seamless it's been, his transition to the manager. Marcelo and Ramos in particular across that back line. Still the loss of Danny Carvajal with that hamstring injury a few weeks ago, I think has been a massive loss. But Cachemiro seems to be settling in. Is still at times, I think, overeager and reckless with his decision-making, which puts him squarely in the eyes of the referee, but he's also a destroyer. And I think he alleviates the pressure on both Toni Kroos and Luka Modric to get him forward. And then Isco. I mean, Isco, I think, has been phenomenal instead of the injured Gareth Bale, and has given them a different look, kind of playing underneath. The hybrid of him flaring out to the right-hand side is always going to be available. But Cristiano is becoming more and more of an individual, kind of wide 1v1 type of player, and Benzema is still as ruthless as ever. So it's a heck of a team, and I think Zidane's done everything right. The big question for me is Gareth Bale. With that calf injury, he promised Zidane he was okay, and he was forced off in about, 15, 20 minutes the last go-around when he was available. I don't think you can trust him, even though all eyes will be on him being a Welsh international in this game being played in Cardiff. But that'll probably be the most difficult and the biggest decision Zinedine Zidane has to make before that whistle even blows.
See, I'm going to say I don't think it's a difficult decision. The only way it becomes difficult is if an owner presses you to play the guy. But I think sentimentality is being sentimental is out the window in this. You want to win this thing. Isco has earned the right to start. And who would be less motivated, or who would not be more motivated than a Gareth Bale off a bench late to try and be a difference maker in front of Welsh fans?
Yeah, I agree 100%. And Glenn, that becomes the most interesting and fascinating conversation is, you know, we as pundits and media, we're presuming that Gareth Bale will be available at some point in this match. And if he is, you just have to hope that he doesn't break down. And that's the biggest fear, right, is that if you can't trust him from the opening whistle, can you trust him at all? And I think that's one of the conversations that managers and training staffs constantly have is you've kind of got the old school guard is if you're not good enough to start, you're not good enough to play versus having an asset like Gareth Bale off the bench. And even 15 minutes, taking what the game gives you, if Zinedine Zidane feels like he's got that asset in his back pocket, that's an incredible play with a substitution and a tactical adjustment that comes along with it.
Dunny, we always talk about quote-unquote team. Is Juventus the better quote-unquote team?
Yeah, hands down. For me, no, there's no doubt about it. And I've been getting stick from Madristas all over the place on Twitter. But I look at this group of players, and listen, Buffon, it's really the only piece of trophy that he needs for his cabinet to cap off such an incredible career. But Chiellini, Bonucci, Barzagliaare the three best centralized defenders in terms of how they play as the collective. Even with the injury to Sami Khedira and how motivated he would be to face his old team, I really like Pjanic alongside Marchisio. I think Pjanic just kind of takes over the game in a different way when Marchisio's alongside, as opposed to being a little bit deferential when Sami Khedira is playing alongside of him. And then the width of Alexandre on one side and Dani Alves on the other, having Mandzukic very quietly absorbing this new role and this look and such a selfless amount of running that he has to put in, recognizing that Higuain is the point striker and he makes that team better. And then Dybala, what an incredible young player Dybala has proven to be. I just look at this group of players and the collective, the individual and the collective, and it's insanely difficult for me to think that there's any team, even in a one-off, even in a neutral ground, that can be consistent enough to punish and break down a team to force them into mistakes, and more importantly, beat a goalkeeper like Gigi Buffon, who time and time again is going to come up with three or four massive saves off breakdown.
I love when you bring up Mandzukic, because I think this is a rarity at this level in the game, and I think this speaks to Allegri and his management style and working with players. But to get a guy who's a traditional number nine, a center forward in Mandzukic, to play as a wide midfielder, and he doesn't even have the body type in some ways as a wide midfielder, yet has been so selfless, the word you used, and so effective that it's like, look, I'm taking my ego and glory. I'm putting it on the floor. I'm doing whatever it takes for the other 10 guys that are out there, the bench, the coach, the manager. I think that you brought him up. To me, that's just so indicative of the selfless nature of that team, Juventus.
Yeah, and to be quite honest, Glenn, that becomes kind of my focal point when I start thinking about my keys to the match and where the breakdown is going to happen. You know, I brought up Casemiro and his sometimes tendencies to pick up those soft yellows. If he picks up a soft yellow in that first 45 minutes, then you start to think about Mandzukic and his positioning. Because obviously with a guy like Gonzalo Higuain, he's going to capture the attention of Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane. Then the question becomes, with no Danny Carvajal, that means Danilo, the Brazilian, becomes the right back. And he just plays the position differently. He has a different temperament, which then leads me to believe that not only Alexandro, but Mandzukic becomes kind of that secondary run in the box. And if you go back and you think about the goals scored against Monaco in the two-legged affair, in particular for Juve, you think about a ball won by Pjanic. He finds the feet of Dani Alves in a wide spot. He plays a first-time ball into Dybala. That ball is either laid off or played into space for Dani Alves again. And then you have a hard run of by Higuain. You have a secondary run of either Marquisio and Pjanic at the top of the 18-yard box. Then you have Mandzukic crashing secondary run. Then you have Alexandro trailing at the top of the 18-yard box on the far side. I just think that's a lot of presence to handle for the defensive shape for Real Madrid that's missing such a vital piece like Danny Carvajal.
Allegri and Zidane, the tale of two tactics in this one, the tactical wits against each other. You know what appeals to me in this game? Wide attacking outside backs. I just love watching Real Madrid's Marcelo and Juventus's Dani Alves.
Yeah. And those two players in particular going up against one another becomes even more of a interesting talking point. And you know, you wonder if they have any lactic acid in their entire body. It kind of reminds me of this, the joke we used to have with Frankie Hiduk, is that he would never stop running, but he always said, my hamstrings never cramp up and my quads never get tired. You watch the way Marcelo and Dani Alves play, and there's a tactical discipline to, I think, the beauty in the way they play offensively. They're very cognizant virtually at all times throughout that 90 minutes of what's behind them. But I think what's more important is what's in front of them. And I think that's what makes it such a beautiful matchup to watch. But I am interested to see these free spirits, so to speak, to see who gets stuck in first. Because, you know, Dani Alves, he's got that little devilish smirk in that glint in his eye. And I love watching him take on these individual battles. So it'll be really phenomenal to keep an eye on how he matches up with Marcelo, who gets the first kick in, and how. I almost wish you had a steady single cam of those two players just going at it the entire time, like a picture in picture, because to see their stats, to see their optostats and their movement, their heat maps, it would be incredible to see that individual matchup.
By the way, Dani Alves, if you don't follow him on Instagram. He is the funniest guy. I've seen him with his feet opening bottles of champagne and doing crazy stuff, which I know his manager would not like, but he is awesome. All right, before I let you go, Dunny, give me a winner and give me a score line.
I'm going to say 2-1 Juve, and I'm not hesitating. I've thought long and hard about it. I've given you kind of where I think the breakdown could potentially happen. I think Pipa Higuain is going to miss a couple of the easy ones and find the back of the net on a couple of the difficult ones. And I don't think you can ever discount, obviously, Benzema and Cristiano Ronaldo. They just have something that you can describe, but you can't do justice to. So I'm going to say 2-1 Juve, which would cap off a phenomenal career of Gigi Buffon and more importantly, kind of throw salt back in the eyes of all the Juve supporters who were protesting Maximiliano Allegri's announcement of the Juventus coach a few years ago.
Well, there you have it, Brian Dunseth. Another one for Juventus. Brian, as always, Dunny, thank you very much for coming on, and we'll see you down the road soon.
Appreciate it, my man. Talk
soon. All right, that's Brian Dunseth. All right, couple of things here. Good stuff there from Brian. Daspit Law Firm. Moment here from John and the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com. 713-322-4878, 713-322-HURT. The Daspit Law Firm is going to assure you that they'll treat your case as if it's their own. It's DaspitLaw.com. They're going to work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Mexico, Ghana, June 28th. Mexican national team returning to Houston. Don't miss this opportunity. You'll catch Mexico ahead of the Gold Cup. There's a good chance Cubo Torres of the Houston Dynamo will be playing for them. Tickets now on sale at Ticketmaster.com. They start at $30. It is Mexico, Ghana. And if you want an Irish pub with that Irish feel, then the Gorgeous Gale is the place for you. Soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gale. 5555 Morningside. You'll catch all the best soccer and football matches there, including the Dynamo. It's the home of the Liverpool supporters group here in Houston. Stop by for a pint and a bite. Whiskey offerings are there as well. Say hello to my good friend Peter. Open field, lots of monitors, an outdoor patio that's beautiful. The Gorgeous Gale, the place to be. TheGorgeousGale.com, official Soccer Matters pub, as we take a break here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Marcel just can't get out of the ball here. Swung in. It's a beautiful ball. It's a beautiful goal. It's pounded in by Leonardo, the Brazilian.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Hey, soccer fans, don't forget, the real soccer pub in Edo is the King's Court right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins on the corner of Walker and Hutchins. Now, they've got 13 TVs there at the King's Court. They show it all. Premier League, Champions League, MLS, La Liga, you name it, they have it. They have 24 taps, a full bar, an extensive selection of spirits, plus tremendous pub food there. Get over to King's Court. It's a great place to go pre-Dynamo and post-Dynamo matches. They've got the rooftop deck, El Bateon parties in there, and they got a great patio that sits in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. Say hello to Jay at King's Court, kingscourttexas.com. Now, upcoming here in Houston on June 3rd, as we all know, it's the Champions League final between Real Madrid and Juventus. There's a wonderful party going to go on downtown called the Heineken's Champions League Final Party. Brian Ching is going to be there, a number of notables down there. But there's going to be one guy in there that has done a few things that nobody has done in there, and that is win the European Cup, which is now called the Champions League. This is a party on June 3rd. His name, well, he's the former Liverpool legend, Steve Nichol, and he joins us now. Steve, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, Glenn.
You know, I go around town in Houston, and you know what I tell people? I say, hey, I called a Liverpool game with Steve Nichol. Gets me in the door anywhere, gets me instant respect.
Good, man. Hey, if it gets you a pint as well, then I'm all for that.
Well, let's, because we got a lot of Liverpool fans here in Houston. We have a big supporters group here. Let's first get kind of a synopsis on the season under Jurgen Klopp this year with Liverpool.
I think initially, first half of the season, they actually duped us all into thinking they actually may have a chance of winning the Premier League. The form was that good. They had as tough a start as anybody in the Championship. One that we all thought, certainly Liverpool fans thought, you know, it's sink or swim. If we start horrible, then it could be a long season. But, of course, as we know now, Liverpool absolutely on fire, steamrolling anybody and everybody, particularly the top clubs. And as I said earlier, they kind of duped us into thinking that maybe there was a chance we could win the title, but from Christmas on, we've kind of leveled off to somewhere that we didn't want to be and find ourselves scrambling now with one game to go, albeit should be an easy one against Middlesbrough to get in the top four.
Steve Nichol joining us here, played in two European Cup finals, winning it in 1984. They beat Roma in the Olympic Stadium, 70,000. We're going to get to that in a minute, but right now we're talking Liverpool. What do you think Liverpool's manager, Jurgen Klopp, sort of has learned here now since his time in the Premier League and maybe some differences between that and the Bundesliga?
To be honest, I actually read an article that kind of he summed up what he had learned, which I kind of think he's right. You know, he was taken aback at the intensity week in and week out of every single game in the Premier League. There is no easy games, regardless of who you're playing against, whether it's the top team, whether it's the bottom team. Nobody gives less than 100%. Obviously, the amount of games. And so all of these things really fatigue your players, both physically and mentally. And I'm sure he realises now that he didn't have a squad big enough with enough quality to cope with that, which is probably part of the reason why, you know, the second part of the season Liverpool have struggled going to lesser clubs, because that's when you need to be able to show how good you are and you need to be mentally in tip-top shape to go to a place, the likes of Stoke, where you know, historically, it's always a tough place to go and play and enjoy yourself. You know, the best teams do that, regardless of where they are, and Liverpool struggled to do that. But again, I think a lot of it was down to the length of the Premier League season, how physically and mentally draining it is, and I think he will be prepared, and I think we'll see how prepared he is by what he does in the summer.
Steve Nichol joining us, the former Liverpool legend, also a great manager in Major League Soccer with the New England Revolution. I remember the day you and I called that game out of a studio. It was a preseason game. It was Milan and Liverpool, and I think one of our talking points was, did Liverpool buy enough? And obviously, I think that's some type of question that's really never left and continues to hang over them. What are their biggest needs? Is it still a left back? What is their biggest needs?
For me, I think they need a proper centre forward. I think they need a recognised centre forward, a guy who's been there, done it, who will just play centre forward. You know, Klopp seems to like three forwards who will intermingle, who sometimes will be wide, sometimes will be in the middle. I'm not a huge fan of that. I think if you look at Lewandowski when he was at Dortmund, the fact that he had a real centre forward, he was one of the main reasons that Dortmund did so well. So I'm kind of a little surprised that he didn't go along that route. At the same time, he didn't really have a recognised centre forward. You know, Daniel Sturridge, who I would say is the only one he had, was never fit. So maybe he didn't have a lot of choice. He had to play three guys that sort of interchange with each other. So definitely a centre forward, definitely a centre forward that scores goals. But the truth is, right up the spine of the team needs a real injection. We need a goalkeeper we can trust. As good as Mignolet's been probably the last dozen games, we can't really trust him. I think we need a centre forward we can trust. You know, Lovren signed a new deal. He's a guy you just can't trust. You don't know what you're going to get. And I think in the middle of the park, we have horses. You know, we have good horses. Chan's a good player. You know what you're getting. Henderson's a good player. You know what you're getting. But we need somebody a little better than that. We need a real figure in there. So you're looking at the spine of the team, to be quite honest.
Steve, speaking of the spine of the team, I noticed last week against Stoke, they went into a five-man midfield and played with three backs. Tell me a little bit about why you think he did that. Is that essentially just kind of answering your question, just to add more players in midfield and add to the quality in that area of the field?
I always think a 3-5-2 is a lot more attacking, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And it's a gutsy move to go there and attack. So I guess if you're a team that defensively is not your forte, then why not go and attack? I would hope that's the reason he did it. It certainly worked, but again, I'm not sure that the personnel is there to play that three consistently in the Premier League. If he can find a couple of good defenders that he could rely on, that we could all rely on, that we all know what we're getting, who just don't make crazy mistakes from nowhere, then yes, you can play three. That gives you more men going forward for me. So it'll be interesting to see what he does at the weekend against Middlesbrough.
Steve Nichol joining us here. You see him on ESPN FC with all our great friends up there, Craig Burley and Alejandro Moreno and others. You know, you're seeing these giant numbers that they're saying they're going to splash out money-wise in the transfer window. You believe in it?
Not really. I mean, there was reports yesterday that they offered $75 million for Mbappe. $75 million is never going to get Mbappe for a start. but I guess if you're a supporter, it's good that they're talking those numbers. I'm a little surprised. I don't believe Liverpool are going to go out and spend that kind of money on a player. Mbappe is a real one-off. You know, he's a guy that maybe, if Liverpool think he's worth 75 now, they're probably thinking 2 or 3 years down the line it's going to be 120, 30. But I think teams are going to pay that already. So I'm not sure if you're a Liverpool fan you think that they're going to go out and buy three or four players at that amount of money. I'm actually surprised they offered that kind of money for a player. I don't think they're fishing in that pond at all. I think they're fishing in the same pond as how Coutinho came to Liverpool, how Mane came, how Lallana came. You know, you're talking 30, 35 million. Um, trying try and bring these guys on and then maybe down the line sell them for double the money. So I think that's where Liverpool are fishing at the moment.
Steve, have we lost some of the authenticity in the game? In other words, I'm listening to you talk about this money for Mbappe, right? And I'm thinking about you back when you played, and I'm going, well, they weren't making that kind of money. Do you think it's a totally different world now? And is it a bit mind-boggling to you? And have we lost some of the authenticity of the players like the Steve Nichols and the Graham Soonises and the Kenny Dalglishes?
I think there's no question. There's a different it's a different attitude towards things nowadays. The biggest one being everything has to be instant. You know, nobody anymore gets an opportunity to gain experience and to learn by playing. You know, particularly in the Premier League, it's all about the here and now, and your players. I don't think they have the same hunger that players used to have. There's no question that money softens players up, and when you get a lot of it too early, I think it takes the edge off you. So yeah, it's a completely different game. But I think more importantly, the way the game's played now, I don't think is as exciting as it was. I was at Anfield for the opening of the new stand, the game against Leicester. And before that, it had been a while since I'd been, and people were talking to me about how, you know, there's not such a great atmosphere for the whole game, and I was trying to figure it out. Well, I figured it out because too many times, not just Liverpool, but other teams, they make their way up to the edge of the opposition penalty box, and the ball finishes back at the halfway line. Now, you can't expect your fans to get excited about playing a pass from the edge of the opposition box back to the halfway line. I don't care how drunk you are. You're still not going to find that fun. So, yeah, there's definitely been huge changes in the game, both on and off the field.
Should you know, you're a commentator now. You're what they call it in England, a pundit. You're someone whose opinion is very valued based on your experiences and all your expertise. Should fans be disappointed? Let's put this to MLS here. Should fans be disappointed when teams are sitting back at home in Major League Soccer? I think so, because I've totally shifted now to I want to be entertained. And I don't think anybody wants to come to a game in the summer with a team sitting on their 18-yard box.
No, that's not why we all started playing the game. It's not why we watch the game. No question, it's harder to make chances and score goals. But my goodness, you know, you should only be sitting at the top of your box and defending. If you're playing against a team that is clearly a mile ahead of you, then, you know, it's a professional game. You have to do what you have to do. But MLS, there's so much parity in MLS that there shouldn't be any team at all, particularly at home, thinking about sitting on the edge of the box. It really doesn't make sense. There is no reason to do it in MLS for sure. So I don't understand why teams do that.
Steve, last one on MLS, and then I'm going to switch it to the European Cup, and then we know you have work to do. So we're here in Houston, right? And they've kind of revamped it. I know you've seen the Dynamo and the changes under Wilmer Cabrera. They're 6-0-1 at home. They intended to get a better home record here this year, but they've had monumental struggles on the road. They've never been able to, apart from one half in Portland, really come out of the locker room looking alive and carrying over that effervescence and energy and cavalier spirit that they have at home onto the road. Now, you having been a guy that was so successful as a manager in MLS, why is the road so difficult in this league? I know it's difficult everywhere, but why is it so difficult in this league for the Dynamo to recapture that home spirit and take it on the road?
I don't think there's another league in the world that week to week you play in a completely different environment, whether it's the amount of fans, whether it's the type of field you play on, whether it's at altitude, you know, whether it's 50 degrees or 90 degrees. There are so many changes from game to game that players in MLS have to deal with that nobody else deals with. So, you know, if you add that to the obvious thing that every team and every league has, that going away from home is always hard, then you end up getting what you get in MLS. It really is unique. There's no question. And it's hard to explain to anybody unless you actually do it. You go from New England in March to California. I mean, it's like going from the Earth and landing on the moon as far as the weather's concerned. So, I mean, nobody else in the world deals with that.
Just a word on Real Madrid and Juventus before I let you go, and how you see this one playing out. And obviously, it's a great matchup between a great Spanish team and an Italian team.
Yeah, up until probably the semi-final, I pretty much had Real Madrid as favourites. But then, having watched Barcelona, you know, demolishing Barcelona, and then giving Monaco as good an attacking side as there is in world football right now, giving them not even a kick, I think Juventus are favourites. I don't think there's another team that are as good from back, middle to front as they are. You know, you can argue that Real Madrid going forward are pretty special with the likes of Ronaldo. You know, whether Bale's going to be fit, we don't know. But they've got a lot of match winners. No question, Real Madrid defensively can be got at. And I think that changes, and that's why I have Juventus as favourites, because defensively, they're outstanding. They are the best defensive team in the world, no question. And they have the capability going forward to hurt you badly. Little Dybala is fantastic. Higuain, you know, Mandzukic, who's a centre-forward, has been playing on a wide left role, not only defender, but getting forward and scoring goals. So I just think Juventus, from back, middle to front, they're flawed. I don't think they really have an Achilles heel. But Real Madrid, I think their Achilles heel is defensively, and that's why I think Juventus are favourites going into it.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for, number one, all your time here. Great insight on everything. I also want to thank you. We're looking forward to seeing you come down to Houston here on June 3rd for the event. But until then, thanks again. And as we get closer to the match, maybe we'll get you in and we'll break it down even more.
No bother. Thanks, man.
All right. He's the best. He's Steve Nichol, and we appreciate him coming on. What a career he had. By the way, won a few first division titles in England with Liverpool too, but we'll talk a little bit more about that. Heineken Champions League final party. It's at the Warehouse Live, 813 St. Emmanuel Street, put together by Brian Ching, Saturday, June 3rd, 2017. That'll wrap it up for tonight. Before we go, you want an Irish pub with that Irish feel, and the Gorgeous Gale is the place for you. By the way, that's where the Liverpool supporters hang out, so that's why we're tagging it on the back of Steve's interview. Soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside Drive. Catch all the best soccer and football matches there. Stop in for a pint and a bite. They've also got a great whiskey offering over there. Say hello to Peter. Open field, lots of monitors, outdoor patio, the Gorgeous Gale, the place to be, thegorgeousgale.com. That does it for tonight. For all of you, for the one and only Tyler Scott, podcastarena.com and iTunes is where you get the podcast of this show. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Good night.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.